Welcome to the Recovery Lab podcast. We're glad you were able to join us. Recovery Lab hopes to destigmatize addiction and normalize recovery.
Our platform provides an avenue to share the many stories of those that have recovered from addiction, providing for the listener the most basic antidote to addiction.
Hope. All right, everybody, we're back. I ritually asked Daniel what episode number we're on before each show. I think this is 79.
This is 79.
79, episode 79 of the Recovery Lab podcast series. I'm Drew Hassan.
I'm Daniel Anderson.
We are the Recovery Lab.
Absolutely.
All right, take it away.
All right, so today we have a phenomenal guest. We have, and are we cool to talk about your upcoming stuff, Ashley?
Absolutely.
Great. So we have a phenomenal guest. Her name is Ashley, and Ashley Bates, and she has over 10 years sober. I know it's crazy. And I've known Ashley for quite a few years. We go to a meeting not too far from here, or I do. Every time that she shares, I'm inspired, and she has great things to say. So it's only natural that she came on the Recovery Lab and talked with us. And today we're going to do a little bit of a different thing with the Recovery Lab podcast today. It's more of a topic type of thing that we're going to be discussing today. And today we're going to be discussing the ninth step promises.
Good choice.
Yes, yes. And this is completely and utterly Ashley's idea, and she brought it up. And
I
said,
I gotta tell you how much I appreciate your coming with a
absolutely
preordained topic.
Right.
It's nice.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. So
makes our life easy.
Absolutely. So without further ado, Ashley Bates, welcome to the Recovery Lab podcast.
Hey guys.
Hey.
Welcome.
All right. Before we get started, let me pull this up here for you. Let's start this off right and read the ninth step promises.
Hang on 1 second. I
yes,
do
please.
Need to add this.
Of course.
My mother and aunt watch this.
Yes.
And they're not in the program.
Yes.
Okay.
So Mama and Aunt Rooney. So in the big book, when you get to the ninth step, these are the things that the AA literature says what promises you'll have come true in your life.
Right.
So here we go.
All right. Here we go. Let me switch this here, and let me roll this down here. All right, take it away, Ashley.
All right, so this is my favorite part of the big book.
Yeah.
And these are the ninth step promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. So work, work, work.
Absolutely. Work, work, work. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when I first came in here, or when I first got sober and I saw these and heard someone read them for the first time, this concept was so incredibly foreign to me. I had absolutely no idea. I mean, my life was a disaster. I was a train wreck. I was a tornado in every sense of the word. And I was not a great person, just not a great person at all. But the longer that I've stayed sober, these promises have really come true. So I'd like to let's kind of dissect the promises a little bit, and let's talk a little bit about what they mean to us and what it looks like for you in your life and the impact that they've had in your life, et cetera, et cetera. So why don't you take it away, Ashley?
Okay, so I, too, when I read that in the big book, which we're going to talk about the big book a little bit in here.
Sure.
83 through 88. Mm-hmm. So the promises are in there, and they're supposed to be, you know, after, during the night, they call them the ninth step promises because that's when they're supposed to materialize, like halfway through the steps. And so, but my sponsor had me read 83 through 88 in the very beginning of my recovery, because that's like recovery guru stuff. You know, when you're working with another person in recovery, you're like, let's read 83 through 88.
Absolutely.
So I read those pages for literally like 6 months. And I liked them because they gave me hope. And I was like, I don't think that's ever going to happen for me, you know, mm-hmm. but it's something, it's a goal, something for me to, you know, look out towards. And when I read them, you guys, like, it just, it calms me. It's just like when you say comprehend the word serenity and you know peace, I feel total peace when I read that. You know, it's just, I don't know. And my favorite is actually the first one. And it says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through, which means that there's going to be some pain involved in this process. And I think that's our common gel as we come in here. And I mean, most people in the rooms know what pain is. And I'm not necessarily, I'm not talking about physical pain. I'm talking about mental pain, you know, like rock bottom and
despair, hopelessness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And they call those what, the four horsemen, you know, mm-hmm. bewilderment, all those things. But, you know, it's just recovery is such a beautiful thing. It's a raw thing. It's uncomfortable, but it's transformational, you know. And I've hit those, you know, Drew and I were talking before this about the valleys, you know, but I wouldn't know that it was a valley if I wouldn't have hit a peak, you know.
Right.
Right.
So it's all necessary.
It's all part of the journey.
Yeah, for our growth and development. So, but the new freedom comes with what we're doing in the rooms, which is being vulnerable, you know.
Which is not easy.
Authentic, honest. No, it's not.
It's absolutely not easy, but I guess I've been sober long enough now, and I've talked about this a couple other times, where alcohol and drugs are not causing a single problem in my life today.
Right.
Right.
All the problems in my life today, the common denominator is me.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that it's so hard to wrap your mind around how really recovery ceases becoming just don't get high today and becomes this transformation of your own personality. And that's just not hard. That's just not easy to do. That is a hard thing to kind of wrap your mind around.
Yeah.
How it is your beliefs in your actions that have largely landed you in this trouble.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a big pill to swallow. You know, my default, my go-to is to point the fingers and blame. And I was effective at doing that. You know, I was adopted and I felt like I had leverage. So when I was in emotional turmoil, I could take that out on my wonderful parents who adopted me.
Aren't we assholes sometimes?
Just devilish. Just yes. devilish.
I mean, we will use people's
yes.
love for us
yes.
and torture them.
I don't know how my dad didn't beat the shit out of me. I just don't. He
Amen.
There were a few times when you'll never steal money from me again is one of the words that was said, and you know,
I deserve an ass whooping.
I did. He should have just beaten the tar out of me, and it would have been who, you know, when the police came to talk, you know, to iron out the situation,
begged for it, officer.
They would be like, well, you know, Mr. Anderson, we apologize that you damaged your hands. Right. If you need medical attention, we will pay for it because your son is a piece of shit and we feel sorry for you. That's kind of where I was at with that. But you know, for me, it was, you know what? I don't know where I was going with that.
It happened. No,
look, I have two girls, okay?
Your children?
Yes. And one is a preteen and then one is a teenager.
Oh, God.
So I get to go back to 12-year-old Ashley, which is when I started drinking, okay?
Yeah.
And my child is totally different from that, you know? And I get to, like, go back and be like, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm just like my mother. Like, what happened, you know? And I'm like, did I do this to my mother? I mean, it just...
Isn't having children interesting? Like, I really have been forced to confront my own self-centeredness by way of example.
Exactly.
I have a 11, fixed to be 12-year-old son who just doesn't give a shit about picking his things up.
We were talking about this. Oh, my God.
He just does not care. And so, I mean, there was a period a few years ago where when I was in addiction and I wasn't around them as much.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I had to do a lot of catch up.
Right.
And... You know, I appreciated parenting from kind of an alien perspective because I hadn't been there toeing the line day in and day out.
Sure, sure.
So now that I'm around them a lot, and I think he's doing that. He's doing that shit on purpose.
Right?
And I,
how could he not be?
Why is he doing this to me?
Yeah, it's being done to me.
It's being done to me.
It's very personal here.
This is a personal attack on the serenity of my home.
Right.
And I have to remind myself, when I was his age,
right,
I did not give a shit.
No.
I couldn't have cared less about the things that I could, like, son, just put the bowl in the dishwasher.
Right?
Oh, for the love of God. I've cleaned this sink 100 times. Or better, you know that counter didn't have any crumbs on it before you got the cereal out. You know it didn't have a single crumb on there. And in reality, he didn't even notice. Why am I so sure he didn't notice? Because I didn't notice. Yeah. I didn't care.
Exactly.
I know, but that pisses me off even more. Like, how could you not know? You know what I mean? Like, how
don't
could
you,
you
appreciate like, my struggles?
Right,
here?
Like taco night. For God's sake, when you get cheese out of the bag, you put it on the taco. It doesn't go on the damn countertop.
Right.
And then when it does go on the countertop, because you got your big fat hands and you can't aim properly on a taco, it goes all over the counter. Well, how about this?
Just crop dusting.
Just, yeah, man. Not just like, hands. How about, you know, just like, I don't know, clean it up. Or we got 2 four-legged vacuum cleaners that are running around the house all day, every day. How about you just dust it down on the ground so the girls can get a little, you know, get their cheese on, you know, right. There are solutions to this. But then like, why does this bother me? Why am I being a complete asshole right now?
Right. He's
16 years old.
Inventory.
Yeah.
On my, you know, how is my self-importance affecting my parenting? Well,
right.
Look, I monopolized part of the conversation. So go back. You're the yes. guest today.
Tell okay, us,
so you are tortured by having two.
We only, did go up.
I only have one daughter.
Yeah.
I made y'all go down the rabbit hole. I did. I'm sorry.
Let's jump back in.
Yeah.
So you get to see these behaviors.
So
that
I
you
get
can
to see
recognize.
These behaviors that I recognize, but also that I don't recognize, right?
Sure.
Because, you know, there's this part about in our literature about suffering the pains of growing up. And like, I had to grow up in AA, right? Because I was an absolute child.
Mm-hmm.
And so they say, you know, that the last time or the first time you picked up was how old you are when you get to AA. So I'm 12 years old in AA.
Your emotional quotient.
My EQ. Yeah,
I'm 11. I was 11.
Yeah, I'm 12. So 12-year-old me comes bebopping in, up in there, you know, and I'm essentially screwing up everything. I mean, my first job, I remember, like, this is a nickname that people gave me, Crashly, okay? So
that's a confidence booster, isn't it? I don't even know why they. It's probably not because you ran into something.
Well, there you go.
Oh, were you?
It's because I ran into something.
Okay. Oh, wow.
By the time I got to AA, I didn't have a license. It was taken. I had a breathalyzer in my car, and
Ashley was going hard.
Going hard.
And I had a lot of consequences, you know? And so by that time, even taking the booze and everything away, it was me.
The sober horse thief.
Yeah. And that was so scary, was they say in the rooms, I'm going to cuss. So son of a bitch, everything's real when you get sober, right? And I literally did drive a van. I drove a catering van because that was my career. I was a caterer. And so literally, Larry B used to say this in the rooms, but he would talk about, you know, when you get sober, it's like you're driving this van and you put on the brakes and everything just flies forward, right? And that was the most beautiful analogy for me, because I was literally driving a van when I got sober, and literally I had a bunch of catering stuff in the back, and there was no, it would slide. So if I slammed on brakes, food was going forward, right? I was a hot mess when I first got in recovery. I'm not going to lie. You know, I was just, I'd come into Yana, and Yana was my place. And I was like, you know, I'd sit down in Yana at noon on my break. Or there was this 3 o'clock meeting that I'd go to upstairs. And it was actually for service people. And they had these really comfy couches. It was super dark. Right. And sometimes, I'm not going to lie, I might nod off or go to sleep because I was so tired. But that was my peace. That was that saved me, you know. And some of those people are here and then some of them aren't. And that's the reality of this is, you know, we meet these wonderful people and, you know, some are here and then some are not. And it's a great reminder that, you know, I got a daily reprieve, you know, based on my spiritual condition. So it's just.
So when you got sober, you had a 5 or 6 year old and a 2 or 3 year old.
Yes. That was extremely difficult. Because they remember, well, my oldest daughter remembered when I went to treatment. Okay. The youngest daughter did not, but she was very clingy, mm-hmm. like always wanted me to hold her and, you know, just scared,
yeah.
you know, and then the other daughter was, well, I'll be honest. She has a fear of abandonment, you know, and that comes with, and I actually have that same fear from my childhood, you know, and we talk about it, you know, and that's,
well, how beautiful is that you can
right,
talk about it?
Right, right.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm very open with my girls. I'm very open. They know that I was coming here today. Like my baby girl, she knew I was coming on the show, you know. Before I left, she was like, good luck, Mom. You know, good luck. And I hadn't told my oldest yet because she'd probably be like, please don't embarrass me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like that's where her mind is.
Right.
Please don't embarrass me, Mom. You know.
You know, my kids know that I've got a podcast, and in the beginning, they're like, "Okay, Dad, how many subscribers do you have?" And like to see the pleasure in their face dim when I said, "Well, I think I've gotten like 8 or 9." I guess they thought I was going to be like Logan Paul.
Yeah.
But what a great gift that you can give them to have done that when they were young.
Exactly.
And believe me, I tell myself the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because, well, obviously one of my kids was not born when I got sober. Not born yet. The other ones were pretty small.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I felt bad. I felt guilt about it.
Sure.
But then I thought, that's not going to.
We can't live in that guilt and shame. I can't live in that.
That's not going to yield me a positive result in the long term.
No.
So, you know, I've been very open with them. I mean, they probably knew more about drugs at a younger age than any of their contemporaries.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they have, you know, all of my wife is in recovery. And so my youngest child, you know, has addiction on both sides of his family.
Right.
My older kids do. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be something they have to contend with. And
yeah.
Right.
I thought, well, I'm just going to be blunt with them.
Yeah. I just, you know, it's the how of the program, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, you know. And that first one is the biggest for me, you know, the honesty part of it.
God, and we lie to ourselves.
It lies. The disease itself lies so much, you know. So it's part of who I am to my detriment sometimes because I'm a very honest person. I can be raw. My sister says that I can be like, she said I'm like an angry texter. I don't know what that means. And then my daughter says I'm an angry texter because I put a period after things. Like, no, you
cannot.
There you
are with the grammar.
Period. You know?
Do you spell period or do you just put a period?
I just put a period.
Okay. That's not.
But they don't understand.
Those teenage, they have peculiar. Well, you have
weird
one.
Texting yes. things
they have
going
weird
on.
Rules, you know.
Yeah. It is. It is odd. Now, if you were to be like period, P-E-R, what is it? Period.
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 We like to make fun of the Gen Z slang.
Period.
Yeah, you know, all that. What is that weird? What are those weird words they say?
No cap.
No cap.
On God.
On God.
That's not only kids. That's certain.
Adults?
Yes, certain.
It's called African American Vernacular English. AAVE. I'm dead serious. That's where it comes from.
Oh my gosh.
And so it has been borrowed from in the TikTok world.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, like my daughter, who is she's sitting on the couch next to me and some girl comes on the TV and she said, "Shawty be a baddie." And I thought, what in the holy hell has happened to you?
Did you slap her?
Oh, I make fun of her all the time and she gets embarrassed about
no!
it.
No.
We do not speak like
that. I'm in good company with these guys and us talking about our children.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, he's wonderful, he's great, you know, he's doing great in school, he's holding down a job. None of those things were true for me yet. The second that I went to my first bar mitzvah and they served us wine and I realized, I'm going to go around to all of these tables and help them finish their wine. You know, from that moment on, you know, I was kind of off to the races and like, he's like, I don't know what's wrong, but like, he's normal and it scares me. And you know, of course, you know, we all have our quirks and, you know, we're all human and have imperfections and stuff like that. But I mean, compared to what his mother and I were like when we were his age, I mean, you know, we're just not going to go there. We were awful, awful people. So, you know, it's wonderful that he's living a normal life today. And to go back to what we were talking about, you know, Marge and I have been upfront and honest with him from the very, very beginning regarding our sobriety, and our recovery and our stories. Like, we have not hid anything from him. You know, certain details, you know, but he knows that we're in recovery.
You aren't telling him war stories.
No, we're not telling him war stories, but he understands the gist of, okay, mom and dad had a problem. They recognized finally they had a problem. They did some work to get past that problem, and now they're living a life that's void of that problem, but they also have to deal with their own, you know, emotions and things like that in sobriety. So, you know, it's considering everything he's been through, he's doing pretty damn good. I would absolutely say that.
Yeah. We talk a lot in the rooms about emotional sobriety, right? And, you know, they say bottles were but a symptom of our problem. So, you know, talking about that, you know, the steps are not, they, for me, they were against everything that I believed, right? Because I'm a rebellious person.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the first step for me, you know, has two parts. You know, we were powerless over alcohol and our lives were unmanageable. Well, I knew my life was unmanageable, but I sure as hell didn't want it to be alcohol.
Right.
And so, you know, I had all the unmanageability, all of it. I mean, the only thing is, thank God, I have and still have a husband of 20 years. And, you know, I had my kids. I had a car. I had things. But I was bankrupt. And in emotional sense, spiritually, I was dead. And I wanted to die, you know. And so that was rock bottom for me. You know, I used to think rock bottom for me meant I was homeless living in a tent in the woods.
Yeah.
Right?
It can get there.
Yeah. It can get there. I don't want to go. Right.
Give me 2 weeks and I'll be there.
With that, you know, but I don't ever want to feel like I did before I came into the rooms. I don't, you know. I remember when I got my 1 year chip, there was this guy in there and I can't remember his name, but he was like, you know, after a year, if you want to go back out, we can refund your misery. And I'm like, why the hell would he say something like that? I'm like, that's rude. You know, I'm like, who is this guy? Who is this guy? Doesn't he know who I am? You know, and just that one thing would be something for me to be like, well, I'll show you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that is what it takes. Like if somebody says something and I'm like, you know, digs at me, I'm like, okay, I'll show you.
Watch this.
Watch me. Yeah. So, you know, but I will say that this last year has been one of my toughest years in the recovery. And it's because I went through a surgery and it was, I'll just be honest.
Yeah.
So I had a full hysterectomy. My doctor didn't tell me anything of what it would do to my entire body and my mind. Okay. And so she did. She was like, well, this is going to change things, actually. But my doctor's so sweet. And she's like, this is going to change things in such the sweetest voice. And I'm not that person where I'm like, this is going to screw your whole world up. Yeah, you know, that's right. How I think, you know, I'm like, boom, down the rabbit hole. But that's another thing that, you know, painstaking. For me, that means there's going to be some bumps in the road. But what AA has given me is discipline, you know.
I like it.
And Sonny B, I'm going to drop Sonny B in here because he's very instrumental in my recovery and other people's recovery. He's not with us anymore, but God, he is in spirit, you know. And he would say, you know, when you get this amount of years in sobriety, you're going to get a backbone. And I never knew what that meant. What does a backbone mean? Well, for me, that means that I'm a people pleaser, right? So I wanted people to like me when I first got to AA. I want to be the most popular, like, AA person. Ooh.
It's a requirement.
Yeah. You know, and as I've gotten, you know, not a few more days in my recovery, and it's like, not everybody has to like you, Ashley. It's okay, you know?
In fact, that's an unreasonable expectation.
It is. It is. And then it'll lead to my resentment, right?
Yep.
You know, it's like a vicious cycle. But so that, and you know, recovery, my sponsor, Joanne, used to tell me, and she's not with me anymore, and but she's with me in spirit all the time. But she used to say, Ashley, you know, you can either face everything and recover, or you can forget everything and run. And I'm not going to say the other word that I wanted to use, but that's what it is for me. You know, I got to walk through this. It's not going to be comfortable, but I got to walk through it. I got to trudge, and trudge means to walk slowly with a purpose. So, you know, and that's what brought me here. You know, when I get a little unsettled in my recovery, I tell my story, or I'm always going to help the still suffering alcoholic. And sometimes that suffering alcoholic is in the rooms. It doesn't always mean that it's the newcomer, you know?
Absolutely.
It'd be your buddy for sure.
Yeah. And God puts those people in your life. And that's what it's brought me, is this newfound awareness, you know, because God puts those people in around me. But if I were drinking and using, I wouldn't see that. Like, I'd be oblivious, right? So it's, you know, in the third step prayer, it was talking about, you know, difficulties. And it's talking about difficulties in helping others with their difficulties. And there's a lot of people in the rooms that have lost people. They've lost children, things like that. And they've helped so many people inside and outside the rooms with some of the worst things that you could imagine. And
I may know the Joanne you're talking about.
You might.
I think I do.
Yeah. But the longer, you know, the longer you stay in here, I have a really great sponsor now, you know, and she is real big on the boldness that you get when you blossom in your recovery, you know, how you get bold and you get, I used to have this therapist that was like, use your voice, Ashley. That's all she ever said. Use your voice. I had no idea what that meant. Absolutely no idea. Until I got in the rooms.
It's a certain interesting byproduct of working the program and coming to like yourself and to feel a small measure of confidence in what you have to say and what your opinions are, and not just being a doormat and willing to compromise just to have somebody make us feel like they like us.
And one thing that I definitely want to talk about before the day is over. So I want to, one part of the ninth step promises that means a tremendous amount to me, and it's very important for me, is we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it.
Good point.
So for me, everything in my past, I was ashamed of. Everything that I had done, there was shame associated, not only just guilt, but, you know, 100% level 9 shame was associated with literally everything in my past, from the day that I was born and I got angry towards my adoptive parents because I was adopted, and my birth mother, all the way to, I mean, everything, the way that I acted from childhood until I got sober, it was absolute shame. So when I read this and it said, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it, my immediate thought was bullshit. I'm going to block it out. I'm going to push it way, way down. I'm doing good now. I'm a better person. I'm a changed man. I don't want to look at the past. We're going to push it way on down. And we'll never talk about it again. I'm a new person, like I said, and we don't need to deal with it. That was my initial thought and response to reading that. Through lots of therapy and talking with my therapist and counselors, I began to understand that whoa. In order for me to be able to move on and grow as a man, I've got to not only deal with, but become at peace with my entire past. So that started a huge push towards a willingness to delve into my past and to become at peace with it. And I will say this, I feel like I mention this every freaking episode, but my work with internal family systems, Richard Schwartz and his work, It fundamentally changed, and my work with Russ Schulte, who was a guest of ours, it fundamentally changed my mindset and allowed me to begin to have that internal conversation that's void of self-hatred and void of shame, and begin to be able to talk to myself in a way, in a manner like this. Hey, I know we did some crazy things. We did some awful, awful things in active addiction, and some awful things in sobriety also.
Yeah, but absolutely.
But let's take a look right now at where we're at right now. We're doing wonderful things. We're helping people. We're trying to be the guy that God has us destined to be. We're actively seeking God's will for our lives, and we are going to make mistakes. It's when. And the conversation goes, I love you. I care for you. I'm here for you. I'm proud of you. We're going to make mistakes, but we're going to get back up and we're going to keep moving forward. We're going to keep charging that path to happy destiny. And so today, through all of that therapeutic work and with talking about my feelings and emotions and being vulnerable with the people that I need to be vulnerable with, I'm now, the vast majority of the time, I'm completely and utterly void of self-hatred, self-talk. It's still there. It's still there. But when those thoughts do come up, my first reaction is to run to those feelings and run to those uncomfortable emotions and say, hey, how can I help you? Mm-hmm. How can I make you feel loved? Because you're activated, because you're fearful about something. So how can I help your fear on this? Right. And I begin to have this conversation with all of the parts that are inside of me. And we come to a solution and we calm the fuck down for just a second, you know?
Calming down.
Yeah.
You're shaking totally, your head. What do you think about all this?
Because of what he was saying. So it is absolutely essential for us to make. It said, after you've said that, though, it says, after we do that, we will comprehend the word serenity and right. We will know peace.
Yeah.
The reason why is because we are confronting those things that for me, I stuffed because I'm a stuffer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't want to deal with that, but I learned that. As a young child, like, you don't talk about this shit, Ashley, mm-hmm. right? So I, too, got to a point in my recovery, and it was nails on a chalkboard. Like, that's how it has to get for me mm-hmm. before I do something about something, right? And so it was nails on a chalkboard for me, and I was like, I have got to go to therapy. I'm currently in therapy right now. Best thing I've ever done for myself.
Thank and God. Your kids.
And my kids. And my husband.
And your husband.
And my husband. And, you know, he's always willing to be like, Ashley, what can I do for you? How can I help you with this? You know? And I'm lucky. I'm so lucky to have that type of person in my life, you know? But like Danny was saying, you know, I told him before I came in, I was like, I have the most self-deprecating humor sometimes, you know? And he was like, this is a safe place. Like, we can't just, like, talk about how crappy, shitty people we are, you know? Which, no, we don't need to do that. Because, you know,
counterproductive.
In our four-step inventory, you know, we take our inventory and we talk about our character defects, but we also talk about our assets, right? You know? And we've got those. And part of recovery is finding your true self, you know, who you were meant to be, right? And we were also saying, you know, if we were doing all that other stuff, we wouldn't. It's about knowing who we are, you know. And I was so scared.
And being willing to tell other people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. One theme we've, if you went back and had a transcript of every episode of the Recovery Lab, this probably comes up in just about every episode. How we really do try to find something profitable mm-hmm. about our past. And I mean, it's really a mandate for those in recovery. Like, you won't really be able to stay in recovery forever if you don't figure out a way to find some use and benefit to the next man of your own poor choices. Use your experience to help somebody, and it will help. It will, I mean, it.
Right. And when you start to think about it in that way,
right,
you start to think of, wow, okay, so some of these things that I did were awful, awful, awful. So it's almost as though, yes, those awful things that we did in active addiction and perhaps even in early sobriety, they were awful. They were awful.
Well, even not. Even you just sitting there just then being willing to be transparent enough to say I had a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
And
that is big.
Hormonal dysregulation and... I mean, I'm kind of filling in the blanks here. Assumptions. It caused some emotional upheaval.
It did.
And being willing to say that on the internet.
On the internet, on the of internet, all things.
Yeah.
At the risk of embarrassing your teenage daughter.
Exactly.
there's a lady out there who will hear that and think, damn, I'm going through the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's my intention. It always is. You know, I was outside in my yard. And my husband and I, we like to work in the yard. And that's therapy for us.
Well, yeah, I got some therapy in the house.
In our yard, not anybody else's. So we were out there, and he wasn't out there yet. So I don't normally get down on my knees and pray. I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah.
But I was close to the ground, so I was like, what the hell?
I'm already here.
Let's go. So before I was like, God, you know, today help me to be of service and help me to say something that's going to help somebody else. Even if it's one person, that's all that matters.
That person can be you.
Yeah. And it's helping me, you know, but I don't know. It's like, that's what you do with a newcomer. You know, that's one of the traditions. It says, you know, when we're helping people in sobriety, we're helping ourselves.
Right.
You know, and Bill's like, you know, the first 12 people didn't get sober, but Bill stayed sober. Right?
Right.
There is a magic that comes from it.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about this, and I can't describe it. I can't define it. I can't tell you exactly how it works. But there, you will feel better about yourself in ways that you didn't know that you could feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
And life becomes better when we can think of ourselves less.
Exactly.
And try to help someone.
And that's the rut I was in, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Is I was thinking way too much about me. You know?
That you've known, in you're talking about a contemporaneous.
I was in a rut thinking about me instead
of my problems.
My problems. This is what's going on with me. And so once I got out of that, things started to change. And it always starts to change once you get out of yourself and you put it out. You know, you just lay it out there.
Amend your perspective.
Yeah. Exactly. And Tom Kay, I don't know if you guys know who Tom Kay is.
Oh, everybody
freaking hilarious. He's like, if he were on this show, he would say, what? I got 30 minutes? I can't even introduce myself in 30 minutes. That's how he talks.
We need to get Tom.
Yeah.
I know it. I hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah.
He'd be great.
And Stuart Milan also.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But Tom Kay always says, this is a disease of perspective. And I'm like, hell yes. Yes, it is.
That's absolutely right.
Yes, it is.
But it's also good to know that, because if it's a disease of perspective, we can immediately change that.
Well, this is one of the counterintuitive things. Like I did latch on to the idea this time that it is better for me to take responsibility for what befell me. You know, the loss of family respect, marriage, relationship with my kids, a professional career. The quicker I got to taking responsibility for it, there was power there, because if my behavior got me here, then my behavior can get me out of here.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, I can remember I went to a faith-based treatment center the last time in Loosedale, Mississippi.
What was the name of it?
The City of Refuge.
Okay.
And I thought, what the fuck have you done to your life? You're in the middle of nowhere, penniless, homeless, hopeless, carless, jobless, unemployed, and unemployable.
Right.
You know, how are you ever going to get back to your senses, your life? And I thought, you've done this. You've done this to yourself. You allowed addiction to do this. But there's power there because we can get ourselves out of the mire.
Yeah.
With help.
And with help, the 12 steps in the rooms.
Yes. Right.
And God.
Right.
Your higher power.
Yes. I don't mean to believe that I alone could improve my circumstances.
No, no. I know exactly what you're
saying. With a program of recovery.
Exactly.
Anybody can get any ox out of any ditch.
Right.
Exactly.
And that's not to say that it has to be Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't
have. No. It can. It says we have no monopoly on sobriety.
Exactly. Exactly.
Go get your own Anonymous.
Yeah.
Whichever one you need.
Whatever. Yes. Faith-based, smart recovery.
Recovery on.
Yeah. Get your CR. We love it. Any path that leads to long-term sobriety, the Recovery Lab endorses and supports.
It does.
Absolutely.
Period. Period.
Period. No cap.
No cap on God.
Period.
For real, for real.
I'm a rude texter, period. Yeah.
At least you don't do like exclamation points. My dad puts Dad, my dad's probably listening.
Never say anything
in
all caps to your children because it's like you're screaming.
Screaming at them. Yes, yes, yes. And
I was screaming at you.
Yeah, I was. I actually was.
That wasn't an accident.
I got to be honest. I was screaming.
Yeah, an exclamation point pretty much also means you're yelling. It's like.
But I was yelling.
We love you! Thanks, Mom. That's what that means. All right, sorry. That was an awful, awful detour. All right, okay. I do not want to go any further. Let me switch camera angles here. There we are. I do not want to go any further without, because my fear of not getting to talk about this is very great right now. Mm-hmm. Ashley approached me last week and had this idea for something that could be incredibly impactful, not only in the recovery community, but in the community as a whole.
Let's hear it.
For women. So why don't you tell us, Ashley?
All right.
What do you got in the works? And what is it going to be? What's it going to be about? And what's your mission with that?
Okay. So drum roll. It's about menopause.
Hey.
Yes, yes, yes. And the name of the show is going to be Scary, Sweaty, Sober.
So you settled on sweaty.
I settled on sweaty.
I like it.
And why I did this, keep in mind, I'm in a room of two men, and I am being so completely honest right now. So I'm super grateful for this fan in here because it's like I'm having my own personal summer every day. And I like to call that, or they call it a hot flash, but that is not the accurate word for that. It is like a ghost pepper inside of you, right?
Damn.
Yeah.
Look, my mom had a hysterectomy when I was in high school, and it made her nicer.
What?
What the hell?
It was, look, Mom, I know you're going to listen to this, and we talk about it. It made you a lot nicer.
Yeah.
A lot more pleasant.
Let's give a plug to Drew's mom.
Hey, Margaret.
So it affects everybody differently, I must say. And I tried to go the all natural route,
essential oils and
essential oils. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to do some yoga. And, my doctor was like, here are these hormones. After you get off the operating table, you need to take these. And I like to do things a little hard sometimes. And so I suffered a little bit because I took nothing. And I woke up and I was slap happy crazy. And that was a hard spot to be in. And again.
So even taking the hormones, you still have the hot flash thing?
I do, but they're not like ghost pepper hot.
Okay.
Right? But they're hot. But not ghost pepper hot. That song, This Girl Is On Fire?
Yes.
That's how it feels sometimes.
Alicia, what is that? Alicia Keys?
Alicia Keys. Yeah. Alicia Keys. Yes. Or I like to call it my ovarian retirement.
Right.
Right.
Well, aside from the hot flash thing, does it interfere with your ability to your executive functions? Like, do you feel like you're more likely to lash out or yes. to be sad?
Okay, so it does all of those things. It affects your mood, your sleep, your everything. For a woman, hormones are everything. And if they're out of balance, then that's like somebody being out of balance, you know? Yeah. And if you got to get the right little thing going on, you know? And I have friends in the rooms that have talked about it. And I swear we could have our own meeting about it. We could have our own support group for it, you know?
And the treatment is supplemental hormones yes. and then diet, exercise.
Well, you know, there's a woman and she talks about the five parts of it. And it's about, you know, your diet, exercise, sleep, mental well-being. And then I can't remember the fifth one. And that's also another bad thing is I can't remember shit. Like,
It affects your memory.
Like, it'll affect my, you know, my faculties or whatever. And I'll be like, my husband and I were talking the other day. And speaking of Crashly, okay, I had a little fender bender the other day, right? And so he was like, yeah. And so I was telling him, he's like, Ashley, have you heard from, let's say her name's Susan, you know, and the guy I read. And I'm like, I looked at him and I totally had no fucking clue what he was saying. I'm like, what is he talking about? Like, who is he talking about? I mean, I get so stupid sometimes. Yes. It's like
I don't know. I saw her on the side of the road.
Yeah, I'm like,
she was hollering about something.
Exactly. That's part of it, you know? But it's so, like I had this baby, this menopause baby, but it's not like a cute baby that you hold and coddle and like to look at
fire
you.
Fire baby.
It's like a fire baby.
Is it one that says, Mom? Mom, 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 mom,
stop!
Mom,
or,
mom.
See, or, I would go off the rails about that.
Or I love to eat XYZ the next day. I hate that.
Exactly.
Nobody eats that.
Yes.
You ate the shit out of it yesterday.
Exactly. Exactly. And so that's what I want to talk about. And it's not, so the name of it is Scary Sweaty Sober. And the first step for anybody in recovery is scary. Yeah. Coming up those stairs or down those stairs into the rooms is the scariest thing I've ever done in my life, right? And it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me.
This is Life on Life's Terms, ladies edition.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And me coming on here and talking about women's issues in front of everybody,
people,
that's not me.
People appreciate truth,
yes.
though.
Yes, they do.
A good friend of mine was telling this story the other night, and I told him, tried to reaffirm with him that the truth resonates at a frequency that lies and distortions don't. And people appreciate it.
Yeah,
people
they
enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
They will gravitate towards it. And it'll be rewarding for you.
Yeah.
Do
and
it.
It's therapy in
podcast.
Itself, right?
Absolutely.
It's therapy in itself.
I learn something every time I sit here and talk to somebody, yeah. every single time. It's very rewarding for me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's gut-level honesty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd much rather read a book about somebody's life than I would about somebody just making some shit up. You know, some truth.
I got you.
Yeah. That's.
I think it's going to be phenomenal. I think it's going to be absolutely phenomenal.
I do too.
I'm excited for you. I'm excited for how you're going to help other people. And how, I mean, my number one, the thing that I enjoy more than anything is watching my clients come in here and grow. Like, that is what's more exciting to me than anything else in this world. Having someone come in here, like for you, you know, the first time, being in the studio, people have a tendency to be a little bit nervous, although you kind of handled it like a champ all day today. So
yeah.
We got no issues there. But some people,
water.
Yeah, some people are, you know, they can be kind of nervous the first time. And to see them, you know, kind of grow and kind of settle into who they are in this realm and in this room and be able to take that then out to the world and share it
Nothing
with the world.
Nothing is as enjoyable to me as talking to somebody about something that they're passionate about.
Yes.
And if somebody feels passionately, strongly enough about something that they're willing to have a podcast about it, it's interesting to me.
Right.
Like, I can't relate to having my uterus removed. But
let's hope not, Drew. Is there something you're not telling us?
I'm not.
Surprise!
Surprise!
That's coming on episode number 80.
Living my truth.
Exactly.
It's interesting to me, and, mm-hmm. and I like learning, and right. I'm a curious person, and so.
I told Danny before, you know, I was like, maybe I can help you, man, when you have to face this in your life. You'll get to know it. You won't be in the dark, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
With Marge.
Was your husband like, what in the hell?
He's like, what the fuck is going on here?
You drinking again?
Yeah, he's like, what? Your whole personality has changed, you know? And it was scary for me because I had never experienced that in my recovery, ever, ever.
It's got to be alien to you.
It is alien.
Because it's not like
and it is I uber uncomfortable. Pill. It's not like I took this pill.
I took
pill,
a pill and now I feel different.
And now I feel different.
It's got to be
like
more organic.
People removed all these parts of me and I woke up and I'm like, holy hell, you know? And it's not like I was doing it on purpose, you know? And it might have felt that way to other people.
Well, look, this is how God works. So it used to be hot AF in here. And he did something with the air duct and got that fan. It very well could have been, if you had been on the podcast 3 months ago, it would have been so hot in here, you may have changed your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did some things.
I was so happy that he had the fan. You know, I could be on the North Pole and be hot. You know,
that's
I could
rough.
Be with the Eskimo in the bottle and I would be having a hot flash.
That air conditioner bill at Charles House is
awesome. Yeah. My husband, I have two weighted blankets that I put on him.
Oh, my.
Because I have the air's on 68.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That fan is ginning in.
The fan is right on my face. And then there's another fan.
And his sinus problems.
And he, this morning, that man could not breathe.
He wakes up every morning.
He wakes up every morning and is like, where's the Claritin?
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
don't
man.
Mess with a lady's thermostat because her thermostat is already on fire if she is in menopause.
Well, I'm excited. First of all, grateful that you were able to come here. We're 2 minutes away from the hour and appreciative.
Oh, here we go.
And I am super excited to get going with your show. I think it's going to be incredibly impactful. We have a tradition here at the Recovery Lab podcast.
You ready for the last two questions?
Oh,
take it away, Drew.
What do you do poorly in recovery?
What do I do poorly in recovery? Sometimes I will be honest and I do not raise my hand when they say, are you looking for a temporary sponsor?
Oh, that's a good one. I haven't heard that yet. Okay.
Yes.
Sometimes I'm reluctant, right?
Do I want this headache? Do I want somebody calling? Do I want...
But I still do it. And you know why? Because somebody did it for me.
Because somebody did it for you. All right. What do you do well in your recovery?
That's a no-brainer for me.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm doing now. I get honest.
Keep coming back.
I keep coming back. I tell you guys, I have never left the rooms. The longest I've ever gone without a meeting was probably 2 weeks.
Well, you don't have to get back to the basics if you don't leave them, is what they say.
That's right. So. That's right. Well.
Look, you've been a true
joy. Like Mark says.
Yeah, go ahead.
Never, ever leave.
Never ever leave.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You have been one of the easiest guests.
Absolutely.
We've ever had.
Absolutely.
Jeez. No pressure. Well, look, there.
We appreciate when people have something to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, okay, I'll shut up after this, but I've been thinking about this for 4 months. You know?
The podcast?
The podcast.
Yes.
And I've been thinking about approaching you guys for 4 months. And one day I was just like, if you don't do it, you're never going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened.
Amen. Well,
it's game over now.
And there you were.
Ain't no turning back.
Obedient to that internal thing.
It was that's the what pull, I said. The pull, the yank.
You intuitively knew how to handle that at that time.
Exactly. Yep. And I prayed about it, y'all. I prayed about it so hard. So hard.
Well, God's timing is perfect. And
sweaty. And it's unusual. And look, it's you've put cool, it out there. And it can be weird as hell. Yes.
Sweaty, sticky sobriety coming at you.
Wait. Actually, it's scary, sweaty, sober.
Scary, sweaty,
sober.
Sober podcast.
Triple S.
Triple S podcast.
I like the alliteration.
I got it. I love it. I
all
love
right,
it.
Everybody. I think that's about it for us.
I think that is about it for us. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for stopping by to the 732,000 people that are on this live stream right now. Our hats go off to you, and thank you so much for joining us. Up 1 million. We just hit
a million.
Just hit
for the first
million.
Time.
We'll see you next week.